Yeah, baby. Chainsaw carving, my friends. Baby, check it out, my friends. Check yourself before you riggedy wreck yourself. This is Dr. Drill, and welcome back to the Making Motivation Podcast, where it is our mission in this life to honor interesting and authentic people, to tell their motivating stories, maybe put some smiles on faces and a little fire under the asses of the masses. Check it out, my friends. Today, I've got my carving mentor, my sensei. I want you to imagine us like samurais with chainsaws, driven at 3,000 friggin' RPMs, oil flying, friggin' man and woman glitter flying all over the place, wood pulp covered, disgustingness, friggin' cut off shirts, muscles, friggin' crazy ass tans. My friend Sue O'Sullivan, aka Sully Bird, aka Chainsaw Sue, is the biggest friggin' ass kicker that I know in that industry. And I'm honoring her today by having her on our podcast, and we're gonna have a great conversation. How you doing, Sue?
I am brilliant, mate. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm excited to talk to you. A little behind the scenes action, just to give you motivators a sense of what it takes to produce a podcast here. Had a little technical malfunctions earlier, technical difficulties. Sue's helped me just on target with those, and I appreciate her patience. I want to show you guys a cool clip of Sue in action. She got about a 2-minute video that I want to share that is highly motivating and will illustrate to you the life of a chainsaw carver, which is pretty stinking cool. So here goes. I'm going to have to use my phone, do a little ghetto method here, but it'll work fine. There's the finished product there. Look at that beautiful bear. Right outside of bear arms. Nice little play on words. Look at this. Sue, how long was that bar?
That one was a 26-inch bar.
26-inch friggin' bar, man. So that must have been the tree looked like it was a couple feet, 2-3 feet apart.
Yeah, that was a pine, white pine.
That's still standing?
Huh?
Is that still standing, the carving?
Oh, yeah. It's actually in the shop now. That used to be standing outside the shop. Now it's inside the shop.
Appropriately so. It'll last longer doing that, right?
Yeah, he's 9 foot tall.
9 foot stinking tall. Well, let me tell you something, Sue. I am forever thankful for your mentoring. I thought about, in my quest, searching for interesting people, authenticity. You are definitely that. And if I may share a short story. May I?
Yep.
All right, mate. So how do people say, like, you know, I do a lot of things. As Dr. Drill, you know, I'm Dr. O. I'm friggin' doing a little part-time professor, teaching anatomy. I'm a fitness guy, and I'm a chainsaw carver. And I am constantly on the lookout for cool new things to do because life would otherwise be boring just to be doing the same old shit. Yes?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are wonder, like, how the hell did you get into chainsaw carving? It seems dangerous. It seems like, you know, you're a chiropractor. You're going to cut your freaking hands off. And that guy, yeah, cuts his friggin', you know, that would be the slogan in the local papers, if there were local papers anymore. Just God forbid, you know. Hence I got my PPE that we're going to put on display. We're going to talk about how to carve and the safety involved and why most of you listeners should probably never fucking do it in your life. But Stu and I can, because we're freaking badasses with good asses. So how did I get started? I was always camping as a kid. I was always into a lot of exposure to nature. My paternal grandfather was a big artist, so he would carve wood and sculpt and paint and write and do all these things. And so he was my favorite. It was always my favorite to go visit him. And I would go down his basement, Sue, and there would be piles of little wood shavings, and there would be mason jars stuck into the ceiling with different grades of nuts and bolts and freaking all kind of shit, you know. So it was like a grandpa's basement. And my grandma, she'd be making grape jelly from the little Concord grape arbor outside. And that would be in with all the canned goods in this little basement area. And so I love going down the basement. I can smell it right now. I can see the chainsaw shavings. I can see all the different art my grandfather would have around the house. And then camping, my dad was always running a chainsaw. So I was into it. I get out in school, I get out in practice, and I'm like, I need something for me. I need to express myself. I ran across a guy at a peach festival or something. He was like a retired industrial arts teacher, and he was making bowls old school way with like ads. You know what I'm talking about, Sue?
Yeah.
So you guys don't know. Sue knows, but you guys don't know shit. So an ads, pretend this little massager is a claw hammer. And this is the claw. So if you were to pry a nail out, you do that. So there's a chisel where the claw would be, and that's really, really sharp. And then you have mechanical advantage. So you do this and you'd be scooping out that bowl. So this guy reportedly had done that, and he had these beautiful bowls with different types of woods and different colors and finishes. And I'm like, this is fucking awesome. You're working in with nature, with, you know, pieces of deceased tree. That's cool. And then I started getting on YouTube, and I saw that there were power carvers with different tools and could do this more quickly, still have fun. So I started dicking around. I started looking, and I get on Facebook. I see there's a community of chainsaw carvers, and there's hundreds of people on there, both carvers and people who are interested in it. Hey, you know, like fucking that. Look at that giant bear. Look at that turtle that person carved. Look at that eagle on its side. Let's see your guns, Sue. You got some guns. Let's see those guns.
Oh, my guns are whittling away.
No fucking way. So, you're into fitness too, right?
Oh, yeah. So.
I decided I'm going to look into this, and I get on this Facebook page called Chainsaw Carvers, and everybody was very helpful. It's one of the first things that I noticed is that in the art community, they say there's nothing new under the sun. So if Sue makes a brilliant bear, and I'm like, I never made one, mine's going to look like shit. So I look at hers. Maybe I muster up the courage to say, hey, how'd you put the fur on or how'd you do this? Everybody was very eager to help the newcomer and to both in terms of safety as well as technique. But Sue, she, above and beyond everyone else, she was extremely helpful to me and many other carvers that came with interest. And so that is my story. And then for many, many years, well, at least a decade, I carved as often as I could, you know, between all the other things I was doing. I'm sure my wife and my mother-in-law and everybody else, all my freaking neighbors were like, that asshole, that guy. I had a patient come in on Friday and he goes, I used to live up in this place up by the, you know, up the road there, kind of out in the country. And I said, I think it's my neighborhood, bro. And I said, yeah, I'm the guy with the chainsaw. He knew exactly who I was because, you know, most people are really interested and find it amusing or, hey, what's he carving now? But, you know, I'm sure I annoyed the shit out of some people, but they can fuck themselves, Sue.
Exactly.
All right, so that's my story. That's how I got into carving. Sue O'Sullivan, how did you get into chainsaw carving?
Okay, so back in 2006-07, my ex-husband and I decided to get an outdoor wood stove. And you have to fill the outdoor wood stove with wood continuously. And he was a lazy guy. So I had to learn how to chop wood. So I had to learn how to use a chainsaw, which in the very beginning was very scary to me. But I did it anyway. And then after I got good at handling the chainsaw, I've always been an artist my whole life, drawing, painting, everything. I'd seen people at fairs, state fairs, carving bears. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. And I just had one of those old, what was it, Pool and Wild something, 16-inch bar, nothing special.
Yeah.
Decided to carve a bear one day, and it came out actually looking like a bear. And I put it in a local shop, put a $250 sign on it, and it sold within a week. I was hooked. At the time, I was a full-time police dispatcher working nights. And that was a stressful job. And I found carving to be extremely stress relieving. So that was it. Never looked back.
That's awesome. So you had some ability to start.
Yeah.
But now extrapolating that to wood, like one of the questions people will ask, like, how do you know, what if you cut too much off?
Right. Yeah. That was the biggest hurdle when I first started, because you'd cut tiny little pieces off and it would take you absolutely forever. It's once you gain the confidence to know that that whole slab has to come off, and you have to gain that confidence to actually take that move. And cut that big slab off.
Yes. And then
things go so much quicker. I mean, I think it took me probably 3 weeks to carve my first bear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd probably work 2 to 3 hours a day on it. So that was a lot of time. And this was only like a 2.5 foot bear.
Yeah.
So it took me a long time. But at the end of my chainsaw carving career, I could carve that bear probably a good 20 minutes, and it would be a hell of a lot better bear than my first one. It's just a practice. Yeah. Gain confidence and practice. That's all it takes.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing though. It's like, it's interesting, you know, you hear about all this technological shit, which is kind of the antithesis of what we do. Like, right. We are taking, you know, like, 3D printing, right? It's additive. You take the material and you build it on top and it does it like that. We're removing
the structure
and leaving behind the sculpture. So you did that bear. What was the next, what was the sequence of carvings you did after that?
I think there was a dolphin, an eagle bench. I did a really ugly eagle bench, like seriously ugly. And I took it to my first fair, and a gentleman from, I think it was Georgia, who was up in this area, actually bought it and had it shipped back down to Georgia. He sent me pictures of it in his yard. I have them still upstairs. I should have grabbed them. But it was seriously ugly. But I was so proud of it.
Yeah.
Like, they were not eagles. It was two eagle heads with, like, a wing, one wing carved out the side of the log. And then the bench was super small. It was, like, maybe 9 inches in depth. And then the back was, like, straight. There was no angle to it. There was no comfort. It was just, oh, it was awful. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But I was so proud of it. I was so proud of it. And then when I sold it, I think I got, like, $500 for it. Like, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was silly.
One of the things, like, to that, and this is no secret, I guess, anybody who's artistic at all, it's like, we're always our own worst critic, right?
Oh, yeah.
So even though your shit, you know, we'll think like, oh, I gotta really sand that bear. I gotta sand that so that looks really good. And people are like, oh, I really like it rustic.
Yes.
You know, I did this thing with pumpkins, and like I would spray paint the pumpkins. Maybe people will like this color on that one. You know, some bunch of people came by to like, oh, I like the one just rough cut, and like, you fucking got it. You right? Pain in the ass to do all that sanding and all that shit.
Yep. Yeah. But, you learn that going along. You don't have to shoot for perfection. That nothing is ever going to be perfect in my eyes. You know, any kind of artwork I do, you don't bother shooting for perfection, because somebody's going to love what it is at that stage that you stand back and say, okay, I think I'm done. Somebody's going to love it. So you know what? When you stand back and say, yeah, I think I'm done, walk away. Just walk away and start something new, because you could spend weeks on just one project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to
try a full time in one project.
Yeah. So you did that. You did that eagle bench. And then, I mean, I'm sure the same thing played out. It's like, I did, you know, probably a bear. Cause that's like the real, when people think of a chainsaw car, they think a bear or an eagle.
Yeah.
And then I saw somebody did a turtle. I'm like, I'm doing a fucking turtle.
Yeah,
I love doing those, and they sell really nice small shit, right? Everybody wants to do the gigantic shit.
Mushrooms.
Like, tell us about this one up top here, top right. This they call these for the viewer.
Oh, the Green Man.
Green Man.
Yes.
So how big is that tree? What's the story of that car?
That was about 14 feet tall. That was a maple tree that the gentleman had taken down because it was rotting at the top and too close to the house, and was afraid the top was going to come off. So I should have sent you the finished product, because I carved the whole thing, and I created like a roof on the top of it. I cut off both sides, so there was like a roof, because the gentleman had a slate roof house, and he had a whole bunch of slates sitting around. So it would be a good idea to cut this thing with a roof on it. And what he did afterwards was he actually laid a slate tile roof on top of the carving, and then he carved all the leaves. I carved all big oak leaves in it, all around it, and then he painted random oak leaves green. Like, mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. Yeah, he did a great job of finishing it off. But
yeah, they're beautiful. That's a beautiful carving. I love Green Men. I never did a Green Man, I don't think.
Really?
Not that size. I did a couple, you know, I was probably, because a little like the smaller shit, you know, how they show you how to, the car, I saw a tutorial where the guys, like, the, you know, the carvers, caricature carvers and shit.
Yeah.
How they create the nose and the cheekbones. And that is something.
Yeah.
That is an, right?
Yeah.
Because capturing the human face is one of the most challenging things. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you got your nose that sticks out. You've got a lot of material to take away that's behind the nose.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, especially on a piece that big, it's quite difficult to do.
Yeah, that's beautiful, though. I love it. What is your favorite carving you ever did, so?
The two dogs in the back of my truck.
That's friggin' off.
My truck bed buddies. I thought it was going to take off. I really thought it was going to take off. But I've gotten a lot of pet portrait jobs out of them.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody has hired me to do a truck bed buddy. that nobody's done what I've done, put the dogs in the back of the truck.
You guys see that? That's her, the bed of her truck right behind the cab. That's awesome and a great idea. That should take off too. You know, I think that something, when you discover something like that and you think it, the world's going to beat a path to your door, right? That's the thing with a giant carving. People, they like, and all the carvers, all the seasoned carvers would say, right? Like, you're going to do a big job and it might make you $1,000, $2,000 if it's really big and time involved and all that shit, technique. But the small stuff, right? I see these guys that are doing, and gals who are doing inventory. You imagine that? That would suck though a little bit. I don't know if you ever did that, but
yes, I did. I hated it. Like September, October rolled around and you knew you had to pump out 100 pumpkins. I hate it.
Oh, that's when it becomes work, right?
Yes, exactly. Christmas trees. Oh, I hate Christmas trees.
Gotta do Christmas trees. But you're thinking, like, you know, once you've experienced like those pumpkins, they're probably all I really have done recently. But just time issues. But they move. I know I can move them. And when you got something that you can, that people like, you're like, fuck it, I'm just going to carve a shitload of pumpkins.
Like I can carve a 20-pound pumpkin that's, you know, probably 16 to 20 inches in diameter. I can carve and paint that in like 10, 15 minutes and I'll sell it for $60.
Yeah.
That's money. That's really good.
Hell but yeah.
It's boring. It's not challenging. It's like being on a conveyor belt, you know.
Yeah.
It's, I don't miss those days.
You're not really creating at that point, right?
No, you just, you know, what you're doing is you are padding your bank account so that you can be creative, so that you can have time to be creative.
Right.
That's what doing inventory is. It's padding your bank account up so that you can pay your bills, so that you can take a week, 2 weeks to come up with a really great carving.
Yeah,
that's what that's about.
That's where a saw bitch would come in, huh?
Oh, most definitely.
Well, I was going to be, listen to you, all you viewers out there, you friggin' butt licks, check it out. Sue, she's so good that she was going to do like competitions and stuff. And you did, right?
Yeah.
So some of these, if you guys, now that you've watched this, you'll see sometimes that they have these meetups where carvers will come from wherever, regionally or abroad, and world carving championships, whatever. And if you're good enough, you can go and you can carve a masterpiece and maybe win, or you can maybe be able to sell the shit. So you carve something like that green man, and then people walk through and are like, I want that green man loaded up. And you can make a good, you know, you can make a good wage and you can compete with some of the best. So Sue was going to do one. I think it was the Rendezvous or something like that, or wherever the hell it was. But I was like, hey, Sue's going to go. And I'm not good enough to do that. But I said, I'll be your saw bitch. So what that means is that Sue would be doing all the like the artistic detail work. And I would be gassing up her saws, sharpening chains, helping out however I could to complete the masterpiece. I would be like an apprentice. So that's how I view Sue in terms of my artistic endeavor with the chainsaw carving. She was my inspiration and I was willing to help her. So I'd gladly be your saw bitch, Sue. It never came to fruition, but maybe no, down the road.
No, the last competition I did was 2017 when I got third place at the English Open.
Oh.
I said to myself, because after traveling all over the country and to England a couple of times, I said to myself, once I place in the English Open, then I'll stop traveling and I'll stop the competitions. And that was my last competition. It was in 2017.
Okay. So did you have a mentor?
I did. I had one. No, two. Butch Elrod, who's from Washington State, and Dick Tilley, who was from England. Back then, when I started, we didn't have Facebook pages and all that stuff. We had what was called the Yellow Forum, the Chainsaw Carvers Yellow Forum, and it was just pretty much blog posts. And I met Dick Tilly on there, and he was the only one. That's why I was so generous with my time with newcomers, was because Dick Tilly was the only one that would help me. And I so appreciated everything that he did for me. But most of the carvers back then wouldn't share. They would not share because they felt that you were going to tread on their space, that you were going to, you know, take their talent and overcome them, kind of a thing. But because Dick lived in England and I was over here, I was no competition to him.
Yeah.
He helped me out so much. Yeah. He helped me out so much. And then Facebook came along and it was like blown wide open, you know. It was like a secretive society back when I started.
Yeah,
and you
yeah.
kept your secrets close to the, you know, close to your chest. And then Facebook just blew it all open. And then it was like every neighborhood had a chainsaw carver in it then.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I know there's a few, like I'm thinking in every area, probably a few people that do it, but. It's still friggin' really, really rare, you know, like it's something that not everybody, like you talked about in earlier, it's going to take some time. You can't, if you're going to try it and never get, you lack sufficient interest to get back to it and continue the endeavor and learn how to take bigger chunks out of the wood so that you can do, I mean, it takes time and energy. And you're fucking exhausted when you get out of there. But it's, as you also alluded to, man, I don't think there's a better, it's almost meditative. It's a major stress.
It's very, like I've started carvings, like the big dragon that I did. I started that carving in the middle of the winter. I'd put my headphones on and I would just absolutely get lost in it. And at the very end, when I finished that carving, I literally stood back and went, wow. Cannot believe I did that. But you get into this, it's your subconscious. Like whenever I'm doing any kind of artwork, I shut myself down and it's my subconscious that takes over. That's the artist in me, is my subconscious. As long as you allow that to come through and flow through you, like I've done some honestly amazing pieces of art that I've stood back afterwards and gone, wow, I can't believe I did that. You know, you snap to and you're like back in the moment.
Yeah.
It's a flow
state. You said it. Well, you said flow. It's like a flow state.
It is. It absolutely is. Time just like goes away. You don't realize time. Time and space is just, it just goes away and you're in this whole different world. And I love getting into that mind space.
Yeah.
It's really great.
In a world of distractions, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
When you find something, and ironically, it's loud as shit. It's friggin' dirty.
Yep.
It's, I mean, exhaust.
I've always loved the smell of two-stroke,
though. Two-stroke, you know, like a, you know, the wood pulp, the two-stroke. What's your favorite wood smell? What's your favorite, what? Cedar.
Oh, yeah, cedar. You can't beat cedar.
Cedar is nice and soft to carve too, and beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
We don't get
a lot of cedar up this way.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that some of those real, you know, the guys who do some of the big shit out west, they got that western
the redwood.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big redwoods.
Oof. But holy shit, yeah, there's a lot involved in it. So let me go down my list here. So you were so willing to help me because you had been mentored by those guys, and then the social media gets a lot of grief, but it definitely opened up the communication, and there was a lot of people. You go on there and you'd put, people would post their work, and you'd see, okay, oh, look how that person did that bear with the expressive eyes, or look at this unique carving. And then that's, I mentioned earlier, the phrase or the statement, there's nothing new under the sun. So a lot of times carvers would be like, oh, look what I did. Oh, people say, oh, I never saw anything like that. And people are like, oh, I've seen it. Yeah, because like, Somebody's always done it. And also the whole, the notion that, that, hey, this is mine. Nobody else can do this. This shit ain't, we ain't Picasso. Like, fucking, yeah, it's, you know, you have your, well, I'll call it, intellectual property. But like, if you, the more you do it, you realize that somebody else taught you. And so it would be nice if you could share in some of your techniques. So I remember you teaching me how to fur, how to put the saw on its edge and fur a bear.
Yeah.
And all these different things. What about, is chainsaw carving hazardous?
Oh my word. Yes.
How so?
Oh, because you get tired. Yeah. If you get tired and you allow that stick to hit the wood at the wrong angle, boy, you're getting that blade right in your face. Very hazardous.
Yeah.
I know a gentleman that had been carving for 40 years who got the chainsaw in the face, got a kickback, hit the chain just at the wrong angle, and it came straight back in his face right there. Luckily, he was wearing a cap like you did and glasses. And he didn't get it too bad, and he came out and survived it. But he's been carving for 40 years, so if it can happen to somebody like that, it can happen to anyone.
Yeah, yeah, and that's I guess that's the thing. It's like, and I would see on some of those videos and images on Facebook, you'd see guys standing. I see some people carving barefoot.
Oh yeah, loads of yeah. No,
what is that bullshit about?
Yeah, no, you're cray-cray. I don't know. I don't know what that's about. Like, there are some people out there that just, I think it's ego. Honestly, it's got to be ego. Like, I'll never hurt myself. I don't need that equipment because I'm just that good. No.
Yeah.
No, yeah. That's just silly. That's silly. Yeah. Why take a chance? Yeah. Like riding a motorcycle. You know, I've got a chance to hop across the border into New Hampshire and not wear a helmet. Guess what? When I go to New Hampshire, I wear a helmet. Why? Because it's stupid not to.
Thank goodness. I'm glad. It's music to my ears. Yeah. I would always wear, like, you know, of course, like sunglasses because you get in the friggin' thing. But then I know everybody's got their preference. We'll talk about chainsaw carving kit, but I got this shit and I just kind of put my cap on backwards and do that. And then, you know, when you're, because you're getting shit in your face, even with sunglasses. So you're going to get some wood pulp in here. You're probably going to get, you're always blinking shit out of your eyes.
Yeah.
So something like this.
Yeah.
You know, if I get a chainsaw or chips or whatever the hell, that yeah. I got that and a million other things. You're always looking for different methods to, you don't want to be encumbered, right? You don't want to be, it's, I imagine, like, go back to the samurai analogy. If you can imagine, like, a samurai putting on all that shit to get in battle, you're like, oh, maybe I won't, maybe I'll just won't put that chest plate on, and then you get stabbed right in the freaking chest.
Yeah.
Then the joke is on you. So, so let's talk about gear, Sue. What is your equipment consist of?
Oh, okay. So first in the ears, earbuds connected to, I don't have them with me. No, they're connected to Bluetooth.
Oh.
So I have ballistic style earbuds.
Yes.
So they cut the decibels down, and then I put earmuffs over the top of those. So when I carve, I actually don't even hear the saw. I hear the music that I'm playing in the background.
Right.
Chaps, very important to have chaps on. A lot of people, when I first started, had half chaps. And since then, thank goodness, they've gone to full chaps and wrap around down the bottom of your leg. Because a lot of the chaps, they have the backside open. And if you're kneeling down, squatting, and you're getting into tight nooks and crannies, you should always have the back of your leg covered too. Because you'll find that if with just the front chaps, after you start squatting down a few times, you'll find that the chaps roll around and actually expose your leg. So I like the full bottom wraparound chaps.
Yeah.
Gloves, I weren't really into gloves, except for when sharpening a blade, then I would always wear gloves. Eyes, very important with the eyes. I've been to the eye surgeon a couple of times to extract wood pieces out of them. The last couple of years I was carving, I actually had a ventilator hat, complete, enclosed, no wood getting in on my face whatsoever.
Yeah.
Once you've been to the doctors a couple of times with wood chips in your eyes and you smarten up real quick that actually glasses don't work very well.
No, it's
especially
true.
On windy days.
Was that the power cap?
Yes. Yeah.
I saw the power cap.
Yeah. They're expensive, but they're well worth it. They are well worth it.
Yeah.
It also cuts down on the fumes that you're inhaling.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember many a 90-100 degree day standing over the saw and breathing in the fumes. It gets exhausting after a while.
Unintended. Yeah,
power cap was one of my favorite pieces of equipment.
Yeah. Now, how about your saws? How many saws did you have?
Oh, goodness. Last count, a dozen.
Holy shit.
I had multiple steel 150s because I would have a lot of overheating problems. So I had like two 150s, two 250s, two 170s, because working, especially during the competitions in like upstate New York and stuff, and we do it in 90-100 degree days, they would overheat. They would just get too hot. So I'd always have a spare there. I had quite a few saws. My 660 was my favorite. The big one. Oh, yeah. I love that big saw. Because you can just lay that on a log with one hand and just... Yeah. Oh, I love that 660. Yeah, phenomenal. So I always went with steel.
Yeah, there. I have maybe half as many as you saws, but my biggest saw, I guess maybe I was probably cheaped out, but I do like Husky. I got the friggin' Husky. I don't even know what the hell is 1720. Let's say it's like it's big. It's the biggest saw that they had, and 24-inch bar on that. That's my biggest saw. But blocking out, right? Yeah. So your 660, you'd use that to do what's called blocking out. Yes?
Yeah.
And so what is that?
Blocking out is taking the big chunks off of a piece of wood so that you can then move down to a smaller saw and start doing your detail work. But blocking out is like we said in the beginning, like we talked about in the beginning, it's the hardest thing to get to as a carver. You need to take that chance in cutting big pieces off to get down to the actual surfaces that you're now going to manipulate into an actual carving. But the blocking out stage is really important. It took me a long time to get there. It took me a long time to get brave enough to cut big pieces of wood off.
Yeah.
But it saves all the time in the world.
Oh,
if you're good at blocking out, then you can go into competition. That was like the biggest thing for me was, okay, I'm really good at blocking out now. Now I can do competitions because you've got to be fast in competitions. You only have so many hours to do a piece. And the blocking out is the main thing. You have to be able to block properly.
Right. So what is, let's talk about some of the components of a chainsaw. How about a chain? To the viewer, you should be able to see the business end of a chainsaw. So the chain fits around the bar, and I got this, I'll eject this battery out. The battery saw. This is also a steel. It's good for detail work. How do we get the chain? Because that's an art too, it seemed. Like there's a million different tutorials as to how to optimally sharpen your chain. How do you do it, so?
By hand, in a vise.
With files?
Yeah, hand files. Yeah, I've done all of the devices out there. I've purchased the bench grinders. I don't like them. They do too much of a chisel head. I like a nice rounded chain. I've done the steel has the device that you run through, and it actually takes the rakers down at the same time.
Right.
No, I've tried all of those, and I much prefer. I can get a saw way sharper by hand.
Just with a hand file.
And it lasts longer too.
Yeah.
The bench grinders and that special steel contraption that they came up with, they don't last long enough for me. I can carve a good 2, 3, 4 hours on one of my hand sharpened blades.
Mm.
And maybe 2 hours on a bench grinder or one of those steel contraptions.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just got to practice it.
I'm sorry. Talking over there. I got busted for my small engine shop. This guy kind of pissed me the fuck off. He passed, so I won't speak badly of the dead, but he gave me a bunch of shit with that new Husky because I took it home. I'm like, it wouldn't start. And I bring it back. You go, would you flood it again? And I'm like, dude, it's a freaking, you know, $1,000 saw here. This thing should start up. I got all these other saws, you know, that start up no problem. And he explained that maybe the bigger saws are a little finicky. Finally came down a peg and he's like, all right, well, these saws flood real easy. So you gotta do this. Get a thing where like you vise the end of it and then you pull it a million times while you hold the trigger and get, you know, clear the cylinder, all this shit. Anyway, so sharpening the chains, that's one of the things I don't profess to have ever gotten expert at. That I would that's a pain in the ass too, the saw maintenance, right? You want these things to run, but you got a dozen saws, you're thinking, you want to show out to the carving pit tomorrow. And that's what we call our carving area, the carving pit. I want to show up to the carving pit tomorrow and I want to I gotta sharpen all my chains, so you gotta do that when you're done. You know, you're all dirty. Check this out. What is this? What kind of use would this be, Sue?
That's for coloring. Burning the wood for color.
What, say again?
Burning the wood for color.
Yes, yes, yes.
Make a brown bear brown.
Make a brown bear brown. So that's a tiny little torch. That's a neat one I think I got from Harbor Freight, which is always our friend. They got some good stuff there.
Yeah.
Even though they get a bad rap about, you know, you know,
China, cheap.
Yeah, but there's some good shit too, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. My die grind, I've never bought. I've had probably 10 die grinders. My whole career, I've probably. They guarantee their die grinders.
Who?
For like 2 years. So if it busts, take it back and they'll give you a new one.
Did you say Sears?
I haven't bought a new die grinder in 10 years.
Did you say Sears?
No, Harbor Freight.
Yeah.
No, because so, they guarantee their stuff for like 2 years.
Oh yeah.
And I'm tough on that stuff.
Oh my god, we destroy it. I was thinking about as part of this podcast coming up to talk to you. I was thinking about when I started. I went to Sears, and I got, you know, like I'm like, oh noise. Let me get a. I'll get an electric saw and I would chew it. And Sears was always great, you know, it's sad that they, whatever, I don't know. They just got consumed by the technology and were an old dog, couldn't teach it new tricks, but they friggin' would give you could return anything from Sears, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would buy the friggin' their battery or their corded saw and I would destroy that sucker in a month and then bring it back and they give me a new one.
Same deal with Harbor Freight.
Harbor Freight, friggin' great, dude. So, so some of the tools of what I just had here. Sue mentioned a die grinder. This is a die grinder. So it's this is battery powered. It's Kobalt, Lowe's brand. And then this is a little out of focus there. It's got some wood pulp in there. So that is a carbide wheel that you might use. This I use this a lot to make an eye. If I want to position the eyes on a bear, I'll just kind of mark them like this. I'll stick it in and jack up the power and it'll burn a little hole. So it looks like an eye. And then to get the wood pulp off of this, what do? Sue, you freaking burn it.
You can burn it.
What do you do?
I soak mine.
What do you do?
I soak it.
Yeah. With soak what?
It. Then it just all comes off.
Water?
Yeah, just in water. Just soak it overnight.
Okay.
Because when you burn it, you're actually destroying the ceramic coating on it.
Okay.
It breaks the ceramic coating down real quick. Do you get yours from Sabretooth?
Yeah, I believe so. I've got a variety of those. Those are great little tools, huh?
Yeah, they're wonderful. Don't burn it off anymore. Throw it in water and soak it overnight because it comes right off then. And you're not messing with the coating that they put on them. They'll last much longer for you.
Okay. See, there's all like, that's one of the cool things about carving. You'll try it. You get a tool and you're like, this is how I'm going to employ it. I'm going to use it this way. And you got all this shit you're carrying. You throw it all in the back of your truck and you got extension cords and all this gear. And then Sue's like, hey, or Dick Tilly or whoever is like, hey, you know, try this.
It's ever evolving. Yeah.
What would be, I love shit like that because I think that we could do that in everything. Not only could communities come together and solve common problems, but it's great when there's a way that somebody does something that can help. It's the term that I use, and this is used mostly in computer science. It's open source.
Yes.
So if you make a friggin' computer program, software program, you put it on this platform, and you're like, hey, I got this far. This is my Sue O'Sullivan version. And I come in, I say, hey, respectfully, Sue, what do you think about adding that?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's freaking that game changer.
Yeah.
And then Tilly comes over. What about Rusty Rayfield?
Yep.
Rusty.
Yep. Fucking Rusty.
He's still at it, I think. He's
amazing now.
Yeah.
Amazing. He's doing fantastic. Yeah, I love that guy. I've loved that guy from the very beginning. A lot of people, especially Facebook, like, Just ignored him and, he'll go away kind of a thing. But no, I embrace Rusty. Same as I embraced you. I love these people that, you know, they're not looking to make $1 million in a year. They're just looking to make their art better. You know, mm-hmm. They're just looking to, they've fallen in love with chainsaw carving and they just want to get better at it. That's all. So why not help? You know, why not teach them a way to do an eagle and then they evolve and they get better at it. Like Rusty's eagles are way better than mine now.
He's awesome.
And so are his bears, to be honest with you. A lot of the stuff that he does.
Yeah.
But he works at it every day. Every day. He's come such a long way and he's such a nice guy.
Really nice.
Such a nice guy.
Funny. So he did I believe is he Wildwood chainsaw carving? Is that his?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I kind of ditched Facebook.
Yeah, I know. I thought I saw, because I saw a Wildwood chainsaw carving post recently, and it was like a heron. I thought that was his handle, Wildwood. It's a nice name. But yeah, he's always a good dude. And I remember he went and spent a few weeks with, tell us the guy's name. He was one of the best.
John Vincent?
Another guy.
Oh my word, there's so many of them.
This guy's
Denny Beach.
Yeah. Dennis Beach. He went and was his saw bitch, I think, for a while.
Yeah.
I had some curiously, I had some patients we just came back from the Pennsylvania, you know, they have some place in the Poconos and they go to a fair and Dennis Beach, they're like, here, Dennis Beach, we bought one of his things. And so
he's a legend.
He's a legend
in the industry.
Yeah. And so that's cool to be part of something too. That's a small enough community where you can actually, you know, interact with Dennis Beach. You could contact him and say, hey Dennis, what do you think about this? You know? Yeah. So the banter was always pretty good back when we were all doing it. This is another tool just to share the viewers. This is a hole cutter, so it's on what's called an angle grinder, and it's got a weak-ass battery, but if you would go to a corded one and be better. So If you look, you can see these round pieces here. And as they as this turns, they gouge out. They're concave. They gouge out a hole. So you can take that and work it into a piece. If let's say you want to remove some wood under an arm of a bear, or carve out a crotch of a bear or whatever the hell, this can help you remove shit. And it's got a circular. A lot of the tools. One of the things that I've always observed is that a lot of tools, like one of my favorites, Sue, is just a sanding disc on an angle grinder. You know, for especially when you're new and you're not ready to do the blocking out. You're not proficient at that. You're like, okay, maybe if I do this, and that's what the fur would look like. You can put the angle grinder on edge and do all that shit.
Yeah.
So let's see here. So saw bitch, we talked about that. What's the strangest shit you ever experienced on a carving job, Sue?
Strangest shit. The shrapnel.
And you saw, you shared me a picture of, would it have like a spike or something in a tree?
Oh, I don't even know what that was. That tree was, oh my word, my worst nightmare ever. That tree was so full of shrapnel. So I came up with a design. It was a wizard and a dragon for this couple. I came up with a design. I sent them the design. They okayed the design. As soon as I started, I'm like, oh, that's not going to work. We got a huge, great big bolt in the top of the piece. Like the bolt was like this big. It was huge. So that was like the head of the dragon, which was supposed to come up over the wizard's shoulder. But that's where the bolt was. So that had to be removed. I couldn't carve around it. So I had to remove that. So I reworked it so that the dragon's head came like around the body of the wizard. And then as I was carving the dragon's head that was in front of the wizard, I came across another eye hook, huge eye hook, which just took off the whole side of the dragon's face. Mm-hmm. So, okay, now I got to rework it more. And then I came across a massive rock pocket in the tree, which all done. Like the whole center of the tree. As soon as I found that, I was doing a plunge cut in the side to get underneath the dragon's wing, and my sword just went boom, like straight through the tree, and the whole center of that tree was completely rotten. So I'm like, all right, I'm done with this. I spent 2 weeks there, 2 weeks, because there was just so much shrapnel in the tree.
Yeah, that's a bummer when you're trying to carve a what looks like a sturdy tree trunk, and then it turns into whatever. How about like characters? How about some of the colorful characters that you carved for? Any clients that were kind of, you couldn't please them, or were they pretty?
I've been actually really, really lucky. Really lucky with like all of my customers. I haven't had, I had one disgruntled customer, which was kind of a funny story. Probably about 5 or 6 years ago, he had a rotten tree. It was a rotten pine tree, but the outside of it was a huge pine. It was probably 6 feet across, but the outside of the tree was still viable. And he wanted me to carve a couple of eagles and some trees in what was left. So I went out there and I looked at the tree and I said, yeah, absolutely, I can do that for you. This is how much it's going to cost. By the way, I don't do the cleanup. You're responsible for the cleanup afterwards. And I always did a contract. He signed the contract. I carved. He loved the carving. And then was like, so when are you going to come back and clean up? And I said, no, it's in the contract that I don't do the cleaning, that the clean away is up to you. So he withheld half of my money. So I always get 50% up front.
Yeah.
50% upon completion. When I finished the carving, he wasn't around, so I just went home and figured I'd get a hold of him and get the rest of my money afterwards. And he was like, well, when are you going to come back and clean up? So we fell out, and it wasn't bother me. It wasn't worth me taking him to small claims. I just, all right, whatever. I wrote it off. But 2 years ago, he got a hold of me again, and he left me a message on my phone. Hey, it's so-and-so. Really loved the carving you did for me 4 years ago. Just wondering, we got another tree. Do you want to come back and carve for me again?
You seem to forget.
I called him back and I'm like, oh, short memory, huh? I said, you still owe me about $800 from the last time I carved your tree. So if you'd like to catch up on your arrears, I'll gladly come carve for you again. He hung up on me.
Asshole.
Oh, my word. I'm like, wow, short memory, dude.
Asshole.
Yes. Yeah. The only asshole, though. I did it for 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah, plus people. That's a wonderful thing is, and again, I wasn't quite as good as you, but some of the big jobs that you would do, it would be like, you know, I did a freaking goat on a mountain. It was probably the biggest carving I ever did. And it involved me because I've got other shit going on weekends. And so I would, you struggle because you want to keep going on it, but like, I got to walk away. And then meanwhile, the client is looking out the window and saying, is that thing going to look like a fucking goat or that don't look good right now. And then it would come together. But the point is the client, if they're going to, it's like you got a relationship because you're going to be spending some time on their land and their neighbors are going to be like, who the hell is this?
Yeah.
With the chains of all the noise and the kids are going to be coming over and looking at it. Most of the clients were actually great because they're, if they're going to buy your art, if they agree to, a price.
Yeah.
At most, I think, I don't know if you feel the same way, but what an artist really wants, in my view, is just somebody to appreciate what they're doing. You know, like if you want me to carve a dragon and a wizard, that's going to be, I can't wait to see what that looks like myself, you know?
Right.
That's a challenge.
Yes, most definitely.
So, the clients are great. You know, nothing better than an artist, a client calling you back and say, hey, could you carve me another one of those? Or,
yeah, I don't know how many times I've said to a customer, don't look at it now. Wait till it's finished.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
They do. They look at it sideways. I can't see it. You know, you got to, there's, you know, a certain way that you get to the outcome. And along the way, it may look like, oh, there's no way that we're going to get that outcome of what she's doing now. But, you know, you got to tell the customer, don't judge it until it's finished.
Yeah.
Because like when you find shrapnel, you've got to tweak your design. It's not going to, I have always told people, you know, especially with on-site jobs, if you're doing a job at home out of a log, you can pretty much guarantee what's going to come out because, you know, you're selective with the logs that you buy. You don't buy them from, you know, some guy cutting down a town full of trees where everybody nails their posters on. You know, you're gonna buy from somebody who's cutting proper trees down in a forest that's not gonna have any shrapnel in it. But when you do an on-site job, when you're doing a tree at the end of a driveway, you know somebody's hammered something into that tree over the years, so you're gonna expect to come across the fact that you're going to have to change your design. You know, you might say you were going to do a lamppost, you know, you're going to take a tree and create a lamppost at the end of the driveway and it's going to be 8 foot tall. Well, you get 2 feet down in the lamppost and you find out that you've got a spike or a skewer going all the way through it. Well, now you've got to cut the whole thing down and you're now 8 foot lamppost. So, I mean, it changes completely. Your designs are never going to be, you will get close to what the customer wants is pretty much what I've always said. I'll get it close to what you want, but I can't guarantee it's going to look exactly like you have imagined in your head.
Yeah. That's great. And it's true. I have, let's talk about this there as we wind this podcast down. By the way, Sue, you're performing brilliantly. I knew you were going to be awesome. I knew that you were, and I hadn't spoken to you in years. And so when I thought about, I missed you. So it's great to see your face and to have a nice conversation with you. This is for anybody who would think that they might want to chainsaw carve. Again, we talked about there's all kinds of tools. So remember me pulling out my little chainsaw before. What we've got here is a chainsaw chain that is wrapped around a metal disc, and you can put it on an angle grinder. So this is
the worst invention in the world.
Yeah, if you want to piss Sue off, you post, people would, again, somebody well-meaning, like, hey, I found this tool. This is really good. I can remove a lot of wood. And I had one, and Sue probably had one, and everybody that I knew had one. But
I never went there.
You never did?
I got one day and went, ooh, bad idea.
Yeah, because people always say chainsaws are dangerous. But, I mean, this is a small saw, but look how far away I am from the saw. So the business end is right here. Yeah. I can control it pretty well. And with all the PPE, the protective equipment, the chaps, the steel-toed boots, all that shit that we talked about earlier, chainsaws can actually be quite safe. But you've got a little disc that's maybe the size of my coffee cup lid here. And it's got, you know, your hand is right there holding that device. If it catches, and it will, it's going to go into your hand.
It's such a bad idea.
Yeah. So there were so many images and videos, images mostly, of people in the ER having been bitten by those things and losing. I'm sure some folks lost some fingers, definitely got gnarled up hands, you know. Mm-hmm. So whenever we would see that, it would launch into a whole diatribe by Sue and all the other senior carvers who would say, listen, don't fucking do it. Throw that thing away. Which is, again, a good tip to get, because you're saving
the people. The Lancelot.
Yeah. So the company, and that was my story. Like I mentioned, the guy with the bowls, I saw somebody using, you know, they had a smaller Lancelot where it was like on a, like a tiny little, almost like a screwdriver handle. And on the end of it, there was a smaller one of those.
Yeah.
And the guy was making these bowls, and I'm like, ooh, look how fast he removes wood. And so I got one of those, and it did, sure as shit, it removed wood really well. But I had a couple near misses myself, and then the gory images started flooding in, and it's like, I can't fucking use that thing anymore. So
No shortcuts. No.
And then there are those who are purists, right? They're like chainsaw carver purists who all saw. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, yeah. And sometimes they're snobs too. They'll be like, all saw, baby. I don't use any of it.
There's specific competitions out there that's also.
Yeah.
Also, no tools.
Last I was on the chainsaw carving forum on Facebook, there was a guy that he would always be like, all saw. Like he would look down on you if you used other shit. There's always somebody. So, there's some colorful characters there. Sue and I were referencing this guy. It was really nice. He seemed like an older man, and he was getting into it and chainsaw carving. And then he would always had his like tagline, whereas I would say, you know, OB or Aaron or whatever, he had Charles, and it was like a script Charles. And then he did something like he took a carver's image of a bear and posted to his Facebook, and then didn't give attribution. And it was like a big shit show. But in my office here, I got a couple things. I just want to show the viewer some of the things that I've done, just so you get a sense of the possibilities. This is a bowl that's carved out of Osage orange, which it actually has an orange color, and it's really, really hard. So it's good for shit like this. I just put a little fruit in that. And then I brought in to show Sue. This is my Jesus Christ Almighty. So this is cool. So let's say we're carving, Sue and I are carving a bear, and I'm her saw bitch, and I'm cleaning up and sharpening chains and all that stuff. What I see something that's over in the corner, and it's like something that I'd wind up in my burn pit if I'm not careful. And so I say, you know what? That reminds me of an ogre club. So I just basically took this piece of wood. It's still got some of the normal character of the wood. This is how it was. And then I found this other piece of thing, and I sharpened it into a spike. And then I put a little handle on the end. And then I got an ogre club. So if you're one who might feel like you need to pack heat, or if you need to like a baseball bat in your, you know, whatever you, you know, you don't want to fuck with the guy with an ogre club. You know, so this will scare the shit out of any potential assailants, you know. So in closing, Sue, I'm going to tell you right now, this is making motivation. I invite people on this podcast who motivate me. You highly are motivating to me. You are my inspiration in art. So all that flow state and stuff that we talked about earlier, you helped me get into that. In the background, the viewer can see a bowl that I carved out of some piece of wood. Again, I was in the discard, and I put a Statue of Liberty. I kind of put some copy paper over that and took the scribed it on there, and then painted it on. So it's one of my favorite pieces. And like Sue said, there's things that you stand back at and you're like, "Oh, that's pretty fucking cool." And then you do dozens of them and you're like, "Okay, you forgot about that one you carved." So this is just something that I found to add to our background. And Sue, what motivates you about chainsaw carving and about life?
Oh, wow. I would never be able to have a career. I was full-time carver for 15 years. That's something I would have never had in England growing up. Like, there's no way that I would have been able to have had a career as a chainsaw carver in England. So I am forever grateful for the brave young 16-year-old I was to up my roots and move them to America. I've had such a phenomenal life over here. You can, you know, people say the American dream, you know, it's dead. There is no such thing as the American dream. And I am absolutely living proof that there is. I've had so many amazing careers since I moved over here. And I want to preserve that for future generations. Seriously want to preserve that for future generations. Like, there's no way. Like, I have three siblings. They all stayed in England. None of them had families. Mm. None of them had families. I have a large family over here. I have four children. I have three grandkids. And nothing pleases me more than when we all get together and we have a, you know, and just them, like my son's girlfriend about 2 months ago drove by one of my carvings that I did like 4 years ago. And she called me up. She was all excited. "Oh my God, I just saw a carving you did." And that's just so cool. That's just so cool. That, you know, just family motivates me. Having a happy life that motivates me. I've always like done whatever I wanted to. I've been, you know, I grew up with parents that said, you will never make a living out of art. You'll never make a living out of art. And, you know, maybe living in England, probably not. You know, you get into this rut of, you get a job, you know, at a store, and you're just at a job at a store for the rest of your life. And, you know, coming over here, I've been a racehorse jockey. I've been a veterinary technician. I was a mother, stay-at-home mother for many years until all my kids were in school. Then I was a police dispatcher. Like, all of these things I always wanted to be growing up. I've never chosen one line and stuck to it. Like, I'll move on. Like, I wanted to be a chainsaw artist. I got into that and I did it for 15 years professionally. I went all over the world doing it. I mean, it's phenomenal. Like, nobody gets to do that. They're like, you know, when you're stuck in a society that says you can't do that. America's not that society. Like, you seriously can be whatever you want to be over here.
You can.
Oh, it's amazing.
Like, a lot of people don't have the, a lot of people though, not saying everybody should be chainsaw cars. We gave that disclaimer already, but I feel like a lot of times, Sue, people feel like even here, like there's these boundaries. Like, I could never do that. I don't have the audacity.
No, I've never had that mentality. I've always had the mentality that you can do whatever you want to do. Like, just the first leap of faith I took, because I got kicked out of my house when I was 14. I was kind of a ward of the state until I graduated high school. You know, they'll put you up in a one-bedroom apartment as long as you're still going to school. And then I graduated school, but I knew my path was I wanted to be a racehorse jockey. And you couldn't do that in England as a young girl. You could train and you could clean stalls, but you couldn't compete. It was only men that were allowed to compete. And I knew I wanted to compete. And I knew I could do that over here. So my one biggest leap of faith, like, I was scared, petrified the entire time, getting on a plane, arriving in New York City and taking a bus up to Salem, you know, Rockingham Park in Salem, New Hampshire, and sitting outside of that racetrack waiting for somebody to come by and hire me. And somebody came by and hired me. I mean, if I could do that as a 16-year-old, I can do anything in my life. And I've lived my life exactly like that. You know, I get it in my mind that I'm going to do something. I want to do something. I want to try it. And I do it. And I just do it. So, I've instilled that in my kids. You know, I had one son that wanted to go to college and I had one son that didn't want to go to college. They're both doing phenomenal now. They both have great careers. It's just, you got to follow your path. Do what you want to do. Don't let anybody tell you you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't be a chainsaw artist. You're a girl. Okay, watch me.
That's what.
Third in the world, 2017.
that sticks out, you know. What? There's not a lot of female chainsaw cars now. There's more guys and gals doing this. So how is that? How does that shake out? How did you feel? I mean, I always felt like you were dominant, whether it was a conversation or the art itself. You were completely at home and there wasn't any sort of disadvantage, or were you well received?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, the carving community itself, they don't do this gender shit. You're either a good artist or you're not a good artist. It's period. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, as long as you can create good art, you're in. Yeah. That's what the chainsaw carving community has always been about. It's a family. It's definitely a family. Once you're in, you're in. Mm-hmm. Whether you still carve or not, I still get phone calls from carvers. I haven't carved in a few years because of an injury, but I still get, you know, messages and how you doing. I know, you know, we don't have to be carvers. We're a family now, you know?
Yeah. Now, what are you, having done that for 15 years and the equestrian stuff and all the other stuff you mentioned, raising family and all that stuff, how do you extrapolate this chainsaw carving? How do you get that to that flow state these days since you're on a little hiatus?
Oh, I don't. I have to be honest. I don't get there now, and I do miss it. I really do miss it. I'll get back to it eventually. But after 2016, I hate to get political, but everything goes to politics. After 2016, when Trump got elected, I've always hated politics. I've always hated politicians. It's one of the reasons I never got my citizenship. Why bother? I'm never going to vote for these people. They disgust me. And then Trump got elected and I opened my eyes to how exactly corrupt the system is on both sides. Like, we're broken. America's broken right now.
Yeah.
And it motivated me to get my citizenship. And I started mid-2016 after getting so many of my friends on Facebook, like, yell at me for Trump getting elected, and I didn't even vote for the guy. I wasn't a citizen. And a lot of them artist friends of mine that I've been friends with for absolute years. They just, it was like, oh wow, the like the art world just went insane overnight, and I couldn't understand it. And I knew I had to do something about it. Like I need to preserve the life. I had such a great life over here. I needed to preserve that for my kids so that they could still have the great life that I had.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my citizenship in 2018 and I went full on politics. And I hate it. I do. I hate it. But we need to fix this country. And the only way we're going to need to fix it is to get regular people involved, you know? Regular people have to step up to the plate and get rid of these crooked politicians and bring America back to what it was originally meant to be, for we the people. Because right now it's for we the elite. Yeah. And it's all politicians that are wrecking this country. So
yeah,
I'm now a Republican state committee woman, barf, one of 80 Republican state committee people in this state. But we already removed a guy that's been in there for 30 years on the national level. We kicked him out. We put a young gentleman in his place that is looking to change things in a way that's going to be good for the citizens of the of Massachusetts, and not just for the elite people that run the place. So
I'm all for that shit. I think about it. You know, I talk about it a lot, like, patients or whoever, you know, family. I have more confidence in people like this lay folks, fellow carvers, yeah. People that that come in, they're not, we're all flawed. None of us are perfect,
yeah.
But I have more, I would bet. I told a woman yesterday she's like a mom. She's a sweetheart. She's a level head. I'm like, I would vote for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 'Cause you're just a reasonable person, yeah. Who I know would want to consider everyone.
Yeah.
In your, yeah. You know, I feel like it should be we the people, and it always shakes out. Like it always seems like, and I say seems like it's like us against them, is because, I wonder, and I know people who have gotten into politics on a local level here, people who I know and love, and it that didn't destroy them. But it, I don't know. Like, I was like, that motherfucker, I know that I got his back. I'm not political at all, but I believe in you. I feel like we should be able to say, like, if you were in politics in Pennsylvania here, and I, you know, you're my friend, I'd be like, well, I believe in Sue.
Yeah.
I don't believe in, party lines or any of that bullshit.
No, it's about America. It's about our founding, you know, our founding fathers. It's about our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. It's about supporting that. And I am that. I am, you know, that first before party. Unfortunately, in America, you have the two-party system. So if you're going to get anywhere, you've got to choose a side. Well, I know for definite, I'm not on the other side. I'm not for infanticide. I'm not for taking a 14-year-old girl and trying to turn him into a boy. I mean, that's that side. I know I'm not that side.
You know who you remind me of?
Uh-oh. Dare I want to know?
I just looked it up, and we're going to close with this, Sue. I learned about this. I don't know, it was a meme or some shit. Sybil Ludington. Paul Revere, for instance, wasn't the only one on the midnight ride. And Sybil Ludington, the young woman who has gone down history as a female version of Paul Revere, riding through the surrounding area of what would become New York, they have never ridden at all, at least according to one historian. But so Sybil Ludington, she rode twice, is saying she rode twice as far as Paul Revere. A courageous teenager rode 40 miles on horseback. That could easily... That could easily have been a Sue O'Sullivan back in your equestrian days.
Oh, most definitely. I'm going to hold on a minute. I need to write that name down. What is it?
Sybil, Sybil Ludington with one D. I saw a meme about her. Sits astride her steed. Ludington made her ride on April 26, 1777 during a driving rainstorm. So Paul Revere gets all the credit, but there was
Gonna have to look her up.
There was a heroine, a Revolutionary War heroine. Look at her up.
Yes, I most definitely will.
And yeah. So anyway, you're freaking kick ass, freaking chainsaw carver phenom artist. I'm proud to know you, and I think this is could quite possibly be the best carving, best freaking podcast that I've done to date, and it's all because you are authentic. And you're sincere and you're a good fucking person. So
yeah.
Love and respect, Sue. I'm going to keep that phone plugged in because I'm going to, it's going to upload on your end and it's going to upload on my end. And when everything is sufficiently uploaded, then I can capture the audio video, sit and share it to the masses.
You feel like
we have anything I need to edit out, or are we good?
No, I think we're good. Thank you so much for doing this.
Brilliant, Sue. I salute you. Have a great weekend, my friend. Appreciate your time.
You too, Amy. Talk to you. Bye.